You're listening to Sideshow Network.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another installment of The Crush. I usually don't call it The Crush, but I think I may go that route from now on. The Crush. Elizabeth, how does that sound to you? Does that sound too intense?
I think I have a crush. So,
oh,
yeah.
Good. Everyone, that voice you just heard was Elizabeth Gore. Say hello once again, Elizabeth. Your voice sounds so lovely.
Howdy, everybody.
Oh, howdy. We got a howdy.
To talk and hear everything that everyone's up to.
That's awesome. I like the howdy. You're showing off your Texas roots.
That's right.
So for those who may not know, I would love if you could give a little bit of a 101, maybe a 90-second version of who Elizabeth Gore is, and then we can get into some stuff.
Well, I was a shit-kicking cowgirl. You're right on that gig. But now I live in Northern California, and I wear two hats. One is I'm the entrepreneur residence at Dell and have the great pleasure of working with Michael Dell on advocating for entrepreneurs everywhere because we both think they're literally going to save the world. And the other half of my life, I work with purpose-driven startups that are trying to be profitable but at the same time have some type of overt outcome to benefit humanity. So those are the two hats I wear. And then I have two bosses that are 2 and 5 years old at home named Opal and Jacob.
Nice. Which bosses do you report to most often?
Right now, the 2-year old. Really.
Yeah,
I have he's harder than Michael Dell.
I have a 3.5-year old. And yes, it's you're like, oh, what did I do? Oh, you love me again. Wait, what did I do? Oh, you love me again.
They're like, I just gave you what you wanted and you're screaming at me. And that's like worse than shareholders. So.
Well, you know, ironically, I feel, and I don't know if this is true for you, but I feel like sometimes parenting prepares me for my day-to-day entrepreneurial journey.
Oh, totally. It's a complete startup. You don't sleep. Everything breaks. You have to iterate every day. You're broke. And then suddenly, you know, you reap what you sow and these kids love you again, just like the business will. So it's just like it. And then, of course, there's the drinking involved and all of that to get through it.
Yes. And the diaper changing on occasion.
Exactly.
let's focus on Dell for a second. I guess, you know, let's go with the basics. What does an entrepreneur in residence do?
Well, I'm a high paid intern is the way I like to think about it. So I have a innovative fast role for 2 years to do a couple of things. One is how do we continue to be the end-to-end solutions provider for every fast growth entrepreneur out there? You know, just like changing those diapers, technology changes, I swear, every 2 minutes. So we have to stay in front of what do entrepreneurs need and provide that to them. So I like being kind of the chief listening officer and taking everything I hear from entrepreneurs back to the company. So that's one thing I am responsible for. The other though is Michael is the first ever global advocate for the United Nations Foundation on entrepreneurship. And I was the former entrepreneur resident supporting the UN Foundation. So we also advocate for everything entrepreneurs need to scale their companies, because we feel like for all the major social issues out there, from ending climate change to educating children to curing cancer, that entrepreneurs truly are the ones that innovate and find solutions. So we try and use our muscle to advocate for everything they need, whether they're policies at the federal, state, local level, and the same with other countries. It's getting them better access to capital. It's finding mentors for these entrepreneurs. So on one hand, I'm doing the listening. And on the other hand, I'm trying to provide entrepreneurs with the opportunities they need to scale.
You know, and I like that it's a whole ecosystem of, you know, resources and vision for what these entrepreneurs need. And I love the chief listening officer. That's a great title. I'm going to steal it, just so you know.
No problem. Go for it.
You know, and so where does, when Dell steps in, you know, when you or Dell, like however you want to position it, you know, from a technology, like, is it always from a technology standpoint? Or are you looking at even soft skills, right? I think some entrepreneurs are missing like, oh, resiliency or grit or just these other sort of, you know, non-tangible things that they need to succeed as well. Do you touch on that part of the journey?
Oh, not only that, but we even touch on culture. So in fact, we just did a study, the We Cities Index, looking at even down to cities, what they're providing for entrepreneurs to help them scale, and we ranked them, and part of it was culture and talent. And talent wasn't just who you're hiring into your company, it was the continuation of learning for entrepreneurs. As you know, the stereotypical hoodie wearing dude is not the world's entrepreneur anymore. It is people from all over the world, every city in our country. But there are different resources in each city. So how are we getting mentorship, training? If I'm an awesome engineer, but I don't have the actual business skills I need to scale a company, how do I get those? And then culture is huge, particularly for women entrepreneurs, minority entrepreneurs, veteran entrepreneurs. Is there a culture in an environment that actually allows them to flourish and encourages it? All of that is critical.
No, that's great. And I mean, that adds multiple layers to your day, I can imagine. And one thing that I think about, especially on the women's side of things, you and I have the Global Entrepreneurship Summit in common. I attended and just kind of the one thing that kind of blew me away was the representation of women. Yes, you've got global culture represented. I think there were 170 countries, but I think there were close to 50, if not higher, percentage of women that were represented. Like, what's changed and or what needs to continue to change?
I mean, I think the face of an entrepreneur looks very different now. So if you look at the Global Entrepreneur Summit, for example, you had refugees there who were entrepreneurs. You had, to your point, I was so proud that the host committees worked really hard to have gender diversity there in terms of 50% women. You have folks from all over the world, different cultures, different economic and socioeconomic backgrounds. So I think entrepreneurship should be defined by the person and their personality and willingness to innovate, get over barriers, build something out of nothing versus the actual tangible product they have. I think how we define an entrepreneur is just different these days. I mean, you know, I always giggle when people don't think of entrepreneurs in agriculture. I mean, look at the new Inc. 5000 list and how many ag companies are in there. It's agriculture is still the number one industry in the world. So are we looking at people in ag as entrepreneurs? I mentioned refugees. My favorite thing when I was working with the UN was to go into refugee camps and see how extremely innovative people start businesses out of literally nothing within 2 weeks. Incredible. So what I worry about on this is I think the formulas and the ecosystems that were built 60, 75 years ago have not shifted to support the new entrepreneur. So even if you look at the kind of new accelerators out there, the majority of them are being utilized by our male counterparts. So I do hope that we're all looking at what are the new formulas to access capital in the venture community, for example. We've got only 3% of venture money going to tech female entrepreneurs, 7% in general. So how do we shift that formula? How do we shift what we need for women to go through accelerators? You know, are they virtual? I love the circular board is the fastest growing accelerator for female entrepreneurs now because it's completely virtual. So I'm excited about the new face of the entrepreneur. I'm a little worried that we got to catch up with the systems that support them.
Yeah. And I mean, that in and of itself is a pretty daunting task. And have you kind of discovered some of the pain points of why, you know, you mentioned the 60 year history, but why this shift is slower than we wanted to? Because you're right. Like some of the best innovation comes from corners of the world that we're not looking in. And I would imagine that would be a healthy appetite for somebody with capital who wants to make more money. But for some reason, we get more Snapchats, you know, those sorts of investments happen quicker than the things that are important that what you're talking about that can also make a difference. So I guess kind of back to the question is why haven't we seen the change?
Well, I think some of it's geography and then some of it is formulas that have already worked, right? So Let's take the formulas piece first. So if I'm I wish I could say that, the venture community is a bunch of misogynistic a-holes that don't care. I actually don't think that. I think the venture community is also looking to shift and try and change this. However, if it's on you to make money and have quick returns, you're going to probably use a formula that has traditionally worked, right? You're not going to be incentivized to actually stretch and take some risks. And as long as those formulas are working, I think you have to make an overt, conscious choice to actually leave room to switch and say, okay, I'm out of my 10 companies I get to fund this year. I'm going to overtly say 3 are going to be either from minorities or women. And you have to make that conscious choice. So I think some of these formulas are just tough, even when it comes to bank loans, not just venture. One of the reasons I love crowdfunding is it's kind of a blind, unbiased, full digital choice. So you see a lot of women actually, I think over 60% of crowdfunding is going to women. It's a formula that's new, it's different, and it's for the modern entrepreneur. So I think we have to stretch. We have to make overt, conscious decisions. And then geography. We're just, again, folks have been traditionally supporting, whether it's through financing, whether it's through selling to customers or so on, with who is around you. So, we all are trying to replicate Silicon Valley, but let's start really understanding how do we find sources of capital and partnerships and marketing in those geographies. Or use this new kind of digital economy to connect us all in different ways. So I think formulas and geography are the two things that are kind of holding us back.
Yeah, and I like that. I mean, I like your Kickstarter example or your crowdfunding example, because I think, I think when I land on a crowdfunding page, I'm immediately focused on the idea, right? I'm focused on whatever that product is, and I'm not looking at like, oh, it came from this group of individuals or this part of the world or some, I'm not immediately confronted with the doubt, subconscious bias, I'll say, that I might have. So there's this kind of like, let's just focus on the issue and the solution. I don't know if there's going to be more of that. Do you see that being sort of a big plus in kind of the future of what you're doing, or is that something that you're paying attention to? Yeah,
totally. And I don't know if you've noticed that, but there's an election going on. I don't know if you've paid
attention.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Well, that crowdfunding didn't exist even 4 years ago. So it came through the Jobs Act or the second Jobs Act. And policy can actually push these barriers and incentivize change and push all of us to do better. And that was a policy decision. So I think we're in an opportunity right now where entrepreneurs in different clusters and groups of folks who represent entrepreneurs can really say, okay, we have a new Congress coming in, we have a new president coming in, we have new state officials coming in, and are there policies like crowdfunding that we can actually shift that will benefit the entrepreneur? Or are there things that are overregulated that we can pull back on that is actually hindering entrepreneurs? So I think actually I am very optimistic this year and next year if all of us kind of work together to say, what are things that we can do, whether it's from a policy standpoint, federal, state, local, that we can push our elected officials to help, like crowdfunding. I mean, that was a perfect example of a policy that is going to bring in what will be trillions of dollars.
That's amazing. And kind of like you, like I'm optimistic and I worry, because I think there's a lot of progress that's been made, and regardless of the qualifications of the candidates, I think any change in sort of leadership means change in where we've come from and where we're headed. How involved are you in protecting the progress, or how important is it to, what are the steps to protect the progress so things aren't overturned or decisions are unkept or things are blocked in the future? Like, what are some of the things that you have to navigate to ensure future success?
Well, me personally, and then representing Dell as their EIR, we are incredibly involved, frankly. We look at different pillars. So how entrepreneurs access capital. Are they open to new markets? How do they access technology? So on and so forth. So all of those things we track, whether they be in Congress, whether they be what are the policy platforms for SMEs in both the presidential candidates, what are the new ideas that the next SBA might be coming in? So all those things have everything to do with our business. Now, what also a lot of people might be frustrated by our two presidential candidates. So if that is not an arena you want to go to, look local. I mean, have you tried lately to buy a building for your business? And, you know, everything to do with your county, your city also has to do with entrepreneurship. What are the tax incentives for you? So you can also track those without too much of investment. And it's better to establish relationships with these public officials in a positive way before you bump up against them in a negative way, which will probably happen if you're a company at some point that's scaling in a significant way. I mean, talk to Uber, talk to Airbnb, all these folks.
Oh, yeah. No, and I think that's where, going back to those like soft skills, right, is like the resilience and the grit and the willingness to try to find a side door when you've only seen one door, and just keep at it and keep pushing in addition to just developing your business, right? There's so many different angles you have to work it from.
I tell you, I just got back last week from Cuba. I had a great opportunity to go down there and I had low expectations when it came to the entrepreneur scene. But I will tell you what, if you want to see a true entrepreneur who is getting around adversity, over hurdles, innovating, I would put my money behind a Cuban hacker team faster than anyone from this
country. Wow, really?
Because of the soft skills you keep mentioning. Oh my gosh. Absolutely. Incredible. Super interesting.
Well, I find that, it's funny. I had a conversation with Roman Sunder from Patel, and we were talking about like these super, or I'll say people that we look at as super entrepreneurs. And usually they have some sort of chip on their shoulder, whether it's like a Rob Dyrdek or, even Oprah, who, was abused as a child. Like you kind of go this complete opposite direction because whatever damage or harm you experience, equal and opposite reaction kind of thing. You find that, those are the things that like, if I almost died a few times as a kid because of the neighborhood I lived in, this software hacking is nothing. Like this is the safest place on earth, where other people they get frustrated so easily. I don't have a question there. It was just a really cool observation, and I didn't think about it from a Cuba perspective, or, as you've gone all around the world, I would imagine you've seen similar sort of disciplinary functions.
Well, totally. I mean, there's a lot of great ideas in the world, right? A lot of great ideas. But scaling a company takes all of those quote soft skills that you're talking about, all of them. Or knowing how to surround yourself with other people, right, who can balance that skill set. And that's why when I came out of Cuba, I thought, man, if they ever open this country up to true commerce, these young people are going to have just killer skills to build companies. That goes back again to the entrepreneur and the mindset versus just the tangible thing they're building. How are they jumping over hurdles every single day, no matter what? And by the way, I like nice people over a-holes. And I think the next generation of entrepreneurs, you're going to see that kindness and being polite and those old skill sets of, being on time, following up, remembering who got you there, actually are going to help with this next, crew of entrepreneurs.
That's an interesting perspective. It is sort of like the humbleness or the sort of the return to, I was going to say chivalry, but that's not right. But, just like your IQ has to match your EQ.
Absolutely.
And that has to be taught. I think anyone who's kind of like hustling toward a dream is kind of like got their blinders on, and you may knock some things and people over on the way to where you're going and not turn around and say sorry or all those sorts of social graces that we forget.
I took a second meeting with a group that I'm now really proud to be on their advisory board, Scoop, and their business model is killer. They're a long distance carpooling company, but they are building it out of the Bay Area because they want to lower emissions and end climate change. And the co-founders are brothers from Atlanta, and they're the nicest guys, but they also have just an unbelievable business. But that second meeting came from their demeanor and how they held themselves. And then, of course, the third meeting came from a killer business model that might end climate change, but, well, might help. But, yeah, I believe that combine EQ, IQ, a good business model, great entrepreneurial skills, and you can do it, man, so, yeah, no matter where you live.
Just a few things to keep in mind. So when I think about Dell and, you know, they make products, they sell products. That is, I would imagine, their core business. What sorts of key metrics are you held to, or are there any, you know, in your day to day kind of exploring and giving entrepreneurs tools and wisdom and support? What are sort of the business expectations on that side of what you're doing?
Well, we do believe in multipliers. So it's very hard. You know, Dell is going through the largest tech acquisition in history. So we're a huge company. But so in my mind, and I'm sure in Michael Dell's mind, we would love to help every entrepreneur in the world, but that's just very difficult. So what I get held to is, how do we have significant multiplier effects with entrepreneurs? So we like platforms, for example. I mentioned earlier the circular board. If we really enhance what is this fast-growing accelerator for women entrepreneurs led by Carolyn Rodd, we support that organization. You know, I think she's got 10,000 companies under her belt right now. That's a huge multiplier, and those are what I look for. 1776 is out of D.C., same thing. Just they're connecting, trying to connect every accelerator in the world with each other to share knowledge on a union platform, huge multiplier. Policy issues, same thing. If we're really going after, you know, we worked very hard. My first objective when I came in as EIR was to help support a new UN sustainable development goal for entrepreneurship. And what that did when it passed is we got 1.5 billion people behind that to support it. It actually gives a roadmap of entrepreneur ecosystem policy for every country in the world. That's a huge multiplier. So that's what I get measured on and pushed for, is how do we support mechanisms that are going to help thousands of entrepreneurs if we actually scale them, whether they be policy, ecosystems, platforms, and so on.
That's great. I love all that stuff. I think about this, this idea.
Are you crushing?
I am. I do. You should see my eyes right now. I'm totally glazed over. And it's not from last night either. No, there's a huge amount of empathy that I think that just stems from you genuinely, but also is another soft skill that you kind of need to do what you do, right? Put yourself in the shoes of these individuals geographically, culturally, you know, agriculture to energy to, you know, social media. How does that manifest itself in sort of how it affects you as an individual? Like, I think when you open yourself up to somebody else's perspective, you also gain mm-hmm. some things. What have you gained mm-hmm. As Elizabeth Gore through going, you know, through this being your career path thus far?
Wow.
Too deep? Was it too deep? I told you I was crushing.
No, that's good. So it's funny because I remember when I got named, I was on the stage at TechCrunch Disrupt, and I was extremely pregnant, by the way, when I was we announced I was going to be the entrepreneur residence at Dell. And one of the first questions was, well, you come from the UN, from a humanitarian background, you're not an entrepreneur. And I remember being like, well, shit. It just really shocked me because I always thought of myself as an entrepreneur. And
that's a great thing to say to a pregnant woman, by the way.
Say it again.
I said, that's a great thing to say to a pregnant woman on stage. That's...
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. I could have given birth right there. Just, like, had all these folks in hoodies just die. I think it was like four women, too, speaking on stage that day. But anyways, and I remember I just had to toughen up a little. I mean, entrepreneurs, I think, are very tough. I think it's scary, and they're risk takers. And in the humanitarian world, your product is are people, people's lives. So a lot of folks give, whether it's the UN or some government agencies, a lot of crap because they're like, why aren't you faster? Why don't you take more risks and so on? But it's people's lives. And so, you know, it's a very different, quote, product. But what I've learned from entrepreneurs is there is a balance between, as you're saying, having empathy for people, helping people in their lives, making sure that your company has a triple bottom line of people, planet, and profit. But then on the other side is take risks, you know, put your head down, become profitable, and have that balance of a little tougher skin, making harder decisions, and so on. So I think the skill set I've learned is to be a little tougher, a little stronger, take more risks. And then the other side is inspiration. I mean, I get super inspired by entrepreneurs. It's very hard for me not to say to everyone, I would love to help you. I mean, when I was in Cuba, I was just like, I want to take everyone home with me. And oh my gosh, we could scale this and we could scale this. And because I definitely bet on people versus their companies first. Because again, I think there are a lot of great ideas with terrible execution. And so I'm learning to hold my personal resources down and really focus on a few big things versus trying to help everyone, which is hard.
Where did this all get instilled in you? Like, I think a lot of people care from a distance, but you're obviously up to your pregnant belly at one point in it. What's the driver for you? Like, what's the thing that makes you go like, yes, this is exactly, because especially if you're seeing all these great business ideas, I would imagine you go like, oh, I want to get involved in that one too. But you're taking the heart route, and I'm curious as like, what keeps you going and like, where did that passion get instilled in you?
I guess it goes back to people. I mean, even I could probably tell I'm an internal optimist, but it's weird because one of my jobs working with the UN Foundation was to take people, business people, actually entrepreneurs in media to the toughest places in the world. So South Sudan, when that was going on, went to the DRC, like really tough trips. But you'd see the worst of humanity and the best of humanity literally in the same spot. And the best of humanity was usually people who were just trying to make a living. They were trying to build their small business. And in that, they were giving back to their community because they were making money. And then whether they were buying healthcare for their kids, whether they're getting supplies that their neighbor needed. I don't know. I've just been always inspired by entrepreneurs and small business because they had a passion, and usually that passion spilled out into the community in a very positive way. So whether you're looking at, I get really excited on a macro level for, you know, the Elon Musks in the world who might actually lower our need for energy and shift climate, all the way over to, you know, the refugee who is going to probably put 90% of her income back into her community and her family because she's a woman and she cares about her kids. So I don't know. I just think people are a good bet at the end of the day, I guess.
No, and I think you're absolutely right. You know, and I was digging into your files a little earlier.
my FBI files?
Yes, exactly. I know so much about you.
Now that I've been to Cuba, there's for sure one.
No, but I saw you studied animal science. You have a degree in animal science.
I do. And if you need anything with your cow, call me.
Yes. First, I got to get a cow. But first things first, right? And then also the equestrian route that was part of your personal history. When did you make a transition from animal science to what you're doing now, right? Like what went on? What was the switch that got turned?
Because we live in the vineyards and we're in the middle of harvest, which is funny. So full circle. But yes, so cattle and horses were my life. And I was the first woman in my family to have the opportunity to graduate from college. And coming from ag, that's what you do. I mean, I had every intention to go back and manage our ranch. And by the way, I think ranchers are amazing entrepreneurs. But I had a shift in school where I had the opportunity to help solve a problem. There was no child care center on our campus, and there was a lot of women who needed that support. I found out that we were the only school in the Big 12 who didn't have women's support services. And I don't know, several of the students got pretty entrepreneurial, got in a little bit of trouble, and ended up in a positive way, getting a lot of support from the president at the time, Ray Bowen, and Mary Miller, who was the vice president there, and said, look, you raise the money and you figure out how to build this, we'll support you. And so I would say that was my first shift into an entrepreneurial endeavor, where we had to get the money we needed, we had to get the people we needed, the whole business plan, we had to get the policy approved.
Right.
And I thought it was amazing that a social problem could actually be, you know, solved, not through, you know, a billionaire, not through government necessarily, but a bunch of entrepreneurial folks coming together and fixing it. And so that kind of opened my world up. And believe it or not, some people do leave the great state of Texas. And so I ran around the world looking around and learning, and had a lot of great opportunities into the cross section between social good and entrepreneurship. And it's been a crazy ride ever since.
No pun intended with the question.
Right, exactly.
So I feel like we've covered a lot. Like you're an amazing guest, an amazing person, obviously. But I think about, you know, you mentioned Elon Musk. We talked about Cuba, you know, refugees, so on and so forth. And obviously, the show is called Innovation Crush. I'm curious as to what your crush is. You know, what have you seen out in the world that you're like, oh my gosh, that is so amazing. I can't wait till this tenure is over at Dell so I can no, I'm just kidding. But you know, what is that thing out there that you see that you kind of personally have a innovation crush on?
Capital for women-owned business. I am obsessed with it right now. I think a lot of people see it as a huge problem, the fact that there's 93% of capital going elsewhere. And women are starting businesses twice as fast as men right now. And so if you want to make a great bet of a completely open field, you know, start building a fund to invest in women-owned business. I'm obsessed with it. I'm crushing on it. I'm pumped about it. I'm meeting with as many people as I can on it right now. And I truly think it's the next frontier. And, you know, it's a good social bet. Women put 90% of their income back in their community and families. So to me, it's instead of philanthropy, let's jump in there and invest in women-owned business. I am like completely crushing on every woman right now who's launching a business.
I love that. So, yeah, we'll make sure they all have your cell phone number once the show's over.
I'm close. Not yet. I'm close.
There's a quote from you. Technology is the most consistent and reliable force that continues to enable and improve human potential through innovation.
I said that? That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You really sounded either caffeinated or two glasses of wine in to be that deep.
Coffee wine. You could just combine the two. That's my pitch for you today. No, but kind of, I don't know. I wanted you to expand on that a little bit, you know, because I think you talked about some analog businesses, but you also talked about some that are tech forward and then the intersection of the two. You know, what is your position on the technology influence in entrepreneurship?
Well, to be truthful, I think every business now is a technology business. And if you don't look at your business that way, you're probably not going to scale. It is the great equalizer. You know, Michael says that technology is what's going to democratize the world. And I agree with that. I mean, if you go into a refugee camp and see 100 kids in line for the one computer to get on Facebook, or in Cuba just now, you know, there's very few hotspots or access to Wi-Fi, but you'd see 80 people in a spot that's maybe for 20 just trying to get access to information. So I do. I think it's the great equalizer. It's also technology is blind. I think that is also a great equalizer. So to our point earlier on crowdfunding, look what that has done. I love the fact that we're moving up into the cloud and we're getting into IoT. I think that's going to, you know, lower our need for physical hardware, which is going to be better for the environment and e-waste. So I think only good can come out of this. And I know a few haters will come back at me, but I do think technology, whether you're thinking about, you know, the digital economy that's coming, or, you know, our hard, the hardware kind of revolution we're coming out of, are all net positive.
That's awesome. That's great.
I tell you really quickly a quote I heard that I loved. Narayana Murthy started the company Infosys in India, and he said that the bank machine, the ATM, never could discriminate against him.
Yeah.
That's something to really think about when he was trying to walk into a bank to get money and was told no, but he could walk up to an ATM machine and get his money out. I mean, that's an interesting quote.
That is great.
It stuck with me like forever. And I do. I think whatever form it takes, technology is the great equalizer.
That's awesome. As we wind down, breathe this whole conversation. And you did good today. Give yourself a pat on the back.
Well, thanks. What time is it? Can I have my wine yet?
There's 5 o'clock somewhere, hours. Right? Is that the saying?
That's right.
I want you to complete this phrase for me, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Innovation to me is...
Innovation to me is saving lives.
Wow, that's a lofty one. I've seen it.
I believe it.
Yeah, no, I mean everything you've said today like echoes that, right? And it's giving opportunity. It's giving opportunity to those to give opportunities to others. It's the multiplier that you mentioned. It's all the things that you've said. That's great. Do you have any questions for me? I don't know.
What is your crush right now? I'd love to hear that.
Ooh, that's a good one. The first thing that comes to mind is this sort of idea of emotional fitness. Kind of like I think you mentioned earlier, this kindness piece that we're returning to. I think a lot of wearable technology has allowed us to monitor our steps and see how much food we ate and so on and so forth. And then I think that forces us to the next evolution, which is our holistic health, right? Are we healthy mentally? Are we healthy emotionally? If my heart rate is accelerated at a point in time because I can see it on my device, then I can go back and look like, oh, I was actually kind of nervous at that moment. How can I be more calm? Right. And then you go down the rabbit hole of
fascinating.
Yeah. You know, sort of self-medicating in that essence. And, you know, a lot more tools and technologies are coming online to be able to help us, you know, be more holistically healthy. So that was my unexpected answer, but yeah, no, that's my crush right now.
I love it. Exercise is my drug of choice, and it just keeps me calm, helps me focus. It's also my only time that I'm kind of alone with my thoughts, and I'm obsessed. I just got a Garmin Fenix, and I'm obsessed with it, with all the technology that comes with it. It is awesome.
Nice. Well, then you're in shape mentally, physically, and I thank you for jumping on the show today.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Can't wait to come back and crush on you some more.
Where should people go to find out more about you? Is there a way they can support? Like, what's now's time for your shameless plugs, if there are any.
No, please go to my Twitter page @ElizabethBohr, and I'd love to talk with y'all. Remember that I'm always listening. You tell me in 142 characters what you're dealing with, and I, from an advocacy standpoint, and I will listen, and we'll use all the muscle we can to, you know, help shift policies and support you. So come talk to me, please.
All right. Oh, you got 10,000 followers. You got a whole community of your own. This is great. Now you have 10,001 at the very least. I just followed you.
There we go. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much again. And I appreciate you. Everyone, this has been another installment of Innovation Crush, and we will talk to you next time.